Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of The Daily Fringe Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm joined by Mr. Gabriel Krauser, as promised yesterday on the show. Gabriel, how are you doing?
I'm grumpy, Nick. I'm frankly a grump, but good.
Yes, no, there are many things to be very justifiably grumpy about today, and we will get into that in but a moment. And we're also joined today by Mr. Tiego Sotse. Tiego, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing good things, and how are you, Nick, sir, despite the circumstances?
I'm feeling, yeah, pretty pepper, actually, considering all things. I don't know why. Maybe it's just a large amount of caffeine running through my system. But that's neither here nor there. Let's start off first with a quick word from our sponsor this week, which is, of course, Trendy Trees. Trendy Trees is the leading luxury Christmas specialist. Buy a Christmas tree and enjoy it in your home or office for years to come, or hire a Christmas tree and Trendy Trees will deliver it, assemble it, and decorate it for you. Visit trendytrees.co.za, your Christmas decorating specialists located in Cape Town, Johannesburg, and Plettenberg Bay. And yes, as a creatively not very capable person, this is something I appreciate greatly. So check them out, trendytrees.co.za, and we thank them very much for sponsoring the show today. So our viewers have already gotten ahead of us on this one, asking what can we do to fight the incoming expropriation without compensation bill, as all the online participation campaigns against it have closed for comment at the moment. And this is, of course, driven by the fact that before the Committee of Justice yesterday, I can't remember what they're called, the Justice Department. I can't remember the official titles. But anyway, the
Justice and Correctional Services. Yeah, the Justice Thank Committee you. Is it.
Right. And the Public Works Committee, the ANC, rushed through the expropriation bill and the land courts bill. So these are now going to go before the National Assembly because the committee has adopted them, and they will then be voted on by all of the MPs altogether in the current form that they're in. Gabriel, why are these two bills so terrible together? Don't we need to update our expropriation legislation? And what's the deal with this land courts bill anyway?
Okay, I'm sure many viewers will already know the answer from that question from Cameron, I think. But let me just go over some of the basics. The expropriation bill says that it is just and equitable for the government to take away your property if you bought it for the purpose of selling it for a profit. It also says it is just and equitable for the government to take away your property if you are failing to exercise control over it. In other words, if someone has invaded your land and you are no longer in control because they're in control, then the government can take away the title deed too. Section 12.3 lists various such circumstances in which it is just and equitable to do EWC, but it says it's an open list. It says including but not limited to. So there are undreamed of reasons that the government can take away
the property. So what's the point of putting the list in?
Well, just to give you a flavor of how terrifying it is in the first place, I think they wanted to let you know this really is about attacking profits. This really is about legitimizing theft. I mean, that is what the first two things do. Okay, so that's the list. Doesn't want there to be any ambiguity about what this is all about. But there are other unimagined reasons for taking your title deed away. It also defines expropriation so narrowly that the government can take your stuff away and call it custodianship, and then it doesn't even need to pass the just and equitable test, which is a way to try and circumvent the constitutional protections of Section 25. So that's three ding-dong, count to 10, you're knocked out ways of ruining your life if your stuff gets taken, and of guaranteeing ruinous consequences for the economy more broadly. Also, there's expropriation for less than market value compensation, where the government can take the stuff now, pay later, announce it now, give a reason later. There's a whole bunch of other issues, but I've just highlighted the first top three. Then on the land courts bill, well, who's gonna decide these matters? Who's gonna think about the problems? We've got a judiciary. It's theoretically independent. Sometimes it acts independently. Sometimes it's a bit compromised. We worry about that sometimes. But there's a whole other section called the land courts, and the land courts bill will change the land courts so that two assessors participate in each case. And these assessors can basically be, you know, university professors of Marxist race nationalism or land activists, black versus land versus land activists. And they get to outvote the judge on determining matters of fact. So just in case you think, well, maybe there's some technicalities, they're vague, you know, maybe a good judge is...
No, the judges won't just let government run over everyone, surely.
No. This is Zimbabwean land grabs. Ramaphosa said, I promise it won't be smash and grab. And what he is providing, or what his administration is providing, is legalized grab. Law, then grab. First the law, then the grab. So you don't have to smash. If you're a criminal and you want to take some stuff, don't smash anything. Just wait for the law to pass, then go take it. That's the promise of the Land Courts Bill and the Expropriation Bill, Kangaroo Court Bill, and the EWC Bill, as I sometimes think of it. To answer the question from the viewer, what can be done about it? We really need to turn up the temperature. So we have, last week we met with the Consumer Goods Council of South Africa. They represent 8,000 retailers. Everyone in the food business, wherever they are in the supply chain, is directly involved in this thing. They need to make a noise about it. We got one of the big banks to update their opposition to this. We are putting pressure to try and get the other big banks to put opposition to this. So if you are a client of a bank, just phone your local manager and say, what are you doing to protect me from a situation where my stuff is taken? What are you doing to protect yourself? Is the bank just going to renege on the mortgage? What's going to happen there? Get a bit of clarity and get the banks to turn up the temperature. We're happy to see AgriSA, representing organized agriculture, has made a noise about it, but AgBiz, not yet. They need to come to the party. I think beyond that, a little bit of diplomacy. I won't say which one, but I was consulting foreign diplomats just earlier this morning. We were very disappointed at the fact that the Biden administration has now twice missed opportunities to warn Ramaphosa against doing this. The first time with Anthony Blinken's visit here, where he talked about vaccines that no one wants to take anymore and didn't talk about the greatest threat to South African stability, which is not COVID-19 at the moment. It is expropriation without compensation. And then Joe Biden and Ramaphosa were meeting on Friday. So the vote on this thing was postponed from last week to this week so that it could skip past that visit. That's not good enough. The temperature still needs to be – everyone involved in this thing needs to make the warning loud and clear. And what we are going to encourage – just last thing, what we are going to encourage you to do, if you haven't done it yet, not only reach out to businesses, but also reach out to members of parliament. We are going to be writing letters to every single member of parliament saying the following. 80% of South Africans prefer growth, and jobs to EWC. Only 15% of white respondents and 15% of black respondents prefer EWC. So if you guys want to sign your own political death warrant, if you want to commit as Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma called it Cabral-esque class suicide. What you're really doing is committing political suicide. If the ANC really wants to guarantee that it is not only voted out, but that it is relegated to the basement level of history, together with other totally failed parties, never to be seen again, then it must go forward with this thing. If it wants to stand a hope of resurrecting itself after it gets voted out, or maybe even holding on to power, it needs to block this. It needs to block it now. It needs to protect property rights, hand out title deeds to everyone who's sitting on government land, and get out the business of picking and choosing who gets to own what. Get in the business of protecting ordinary people from criminals rather than becoming a criminal itself. And you should write a letter to your MP too. That's what I was going to say. You belong to a constituency. We're going to try and help out people who have already signed up. We've had so many signatures to be alert of the email address and the MP that theoretically represents them. The more those signatures come through, the more the message percolates up, the better chance we have of getting those 5 votes we need to tilt in order to block this thing.
But I just want to say, you know, if you think that pressure doesn't work, the ANC postponed that very specifically because they didn't want to have to face awkward questions from the Americans, because that would have put them under pressure. Now, we're disappointed that the Americans didn't do that, but it still shows that they have a sense of these things. It's not like you're just shouting into the wind here. You really will be making a difference. So do add your voice to the thing. And the more public pressure there is, the more likely it is the ANC will halt or delay this legislation until 2024 comes. Right. Tiako, Gabriel said a lot of stuff there. I'm not sure how much there is to add. Maybe you want to talk about what your thoughts on this, on these pieces of legislation are. Maybe you want to talk about why the government is so insistent on pursuing these pieces of legislation, despite their obvious economic catastrophic consequences.
Well, I think firstly, Gabriel was correct to contextualize this as legitimized criminality. This is really theft that is legitimized. You can't just go around taking people's properties, right? But secondly, they are doing this simply because they've run out of ideas. Well, they've never had ideas in the first place. All they've ever had and all they've ever known was how to fight the apartheid government. But they've never really had a plan of what to do if they do come into governance. And it's quite clear that the ANC in and of itself has never really had a plan on how to grow the economy, how to create jobs and stuff of that nature. It was really just a few individuals within the organization, your Thabo Mbekis, your Mandelas and some, who went ahead with certain plans, but the party in and of itself has never really agreed upon a position of how to go forward and how to grow the economy like that. So I think it's an ANC that has failed. They see that they failed at everything. They failed to grow the economy, create jobs, ensure that people have better lives and can afford to buy houses and stuff of that nature, and now want to go take the easier route of grabbing land and handing it over to people, which is not going to help at all economically. All it's going to do is that it's going to bring our economy down. Think about houses that people have bought through banks and they are still paying back their banks. Who's going to pay back the banks once you have taken that property away from the people who live in it? Who then pays the difference? I mean, I as a citizen would not pay the bank for a loan that I took if the property has been taken away from me. So banks are in a crisis, citizens are in a crisis, and we really do need to stand up against this government, all of us collectively. Banks must be at the very forefront, since many of these properties that might be expropriated are really still owned by them. People who have bought them through them are still owing them, and if it does happen at the end of the day, banks will face much of the consequences on their part as well. So I do hope that they come on board and fight this fight with the citizens.
Right. No, it's going to take all of society, citizens, businesses, civil society organizations, political parties, everyone to push back against this, because the consequences, not just for the middle class, not just for whites, not just for pick your favorite group here, but for everyone, will be terrible. Gabriel, any final thoughts?
Yeah, final thoughts. You mentioned political parties there. I thought it was good that ACDP, IFP, and DA, who were all sitting on the committee, all voted against all the bad parts of the expropriation bill. And what I think all South Africans deserve right now is for those coalition parties that are trying to get their act together to take over from the ANC, EFF, bull and calf of South Africa, to make a joint statement now. That they stand up and that they reject this. And those guys should really be, if I was them, I would be looking to hit the streets on this. I'd be looking to make a big deal out of this. 2019 election, there somehow everyone almost agreed not to talk about expropriation without compensation. It was kind of a hope that Ramaphosa was faking it. If you push it too hard, you'll make it seem like the election legitimizes it. This election, if the ANC wins in 2024, there's no doubt that they are going to implement this, because as Tiego said, they don't have a better idea. The opposition has to be putting forward a better alternative and be saying, we stand against this. This is part of what makes us better than the ANC and the EFF, is that we do not believe the state deserves to take your stuff when you are not guilty of any crime. That is a huge differentiator between, you know, what is the IFP and the ACDP and the FF Plus and the DA and ASA and Maimani's party? What do they all agree on? I don't know. They should all agree on this, and they should be saying so to turn up the temperature.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, check out the campaigns page for the IRR, irr.org.za. Campaigns, Stop the Expropriation Without Compensation. There will be links to it in the comments of this show on YouTube and in the description. Okay. So our story moving away from this big one is that the ANC has lost control over Nelson Mandela Bay municipality. A DA councillor called Retief Ordendal was elected as mayor in Nelson Mandela Bay Metro. Yesterday, it was only in the early hours of Thursday morning, and it took 10 hours from a vote of no confidence in the previous mayor to put in the new mayor, because apparently, according to some DA councillors who were present there, after the vote of no confidence succeeded and the voting began for the mayor, some councillors from the ANC EFF bloc grabbed some of the ballots and destroyed them before they could be counted, which is a bit wild. Unfortunately for them, that really didn't stop things. And a coalition supported by the DA, the PAC, the UDM, the ACDP, and the Freedom Front Plus all together managed to secure control of the municipality. And so now, once again, the opposition coalition, the coalition is in power again in Nelson Mandela Bay. They did have it briefly after 2016, but they lost power then. So I guess the first question, Tiego, I'm going to start with you. What do you make of this election process? It's pretty worrying when we see stuff like this in the Nelson Mandela Bay council chambers. We've seen stuff before, of course. There was the famous assault case where an ANC councillor smashed a heavy glass jug on a DA councillor's head. And yet, despite the disruption, it looks like the process kind of worked in the end. And what do you think the prospects for this government are going forward?
One doesn't really know, Nick. This is not happening for the first time. It's been happening since 2016. It's still happening now. One really only wonders what's going to happen, say, if in 2024 the ANC, at the national level that is, the ANC was to get out and we were to have a coalition government. Are we going to have such a thing playing out at a national level or what? So this is quite frustrating, I must be honest. And it's understandable why such a thing would happen. I mean, you have political parties that don't agree fundamentally upon certain values and principles having to come together. But one would have, I think what would work is if the leaders put aside ideologies to a certain extent, put them aside, came up with an agreement of what the practical terms and conditions of working together moving forward and ensuring that services are provided to the people can be, and try to stick to that. But it doesn't seem that's what's happening, right? We keep on seeing these changes of governments and stuff of that nature, disagreements after partnerships have been made and stuff of that nature. One really just wonders what's happening. But one thing, what one can conclude from this is that perhaps the interests of the people are not at the center of all these parties that are participating here. I reckon that if the people were at the center of all these decisions, then we should have stronger coalition governments. But yeah, since certain parties, certain individuals must look for themselves, look after themselves and their wallets and stuff here and there, it creates this mess. But I hope that moving forward, 2024 will have leaders who put the people at the center, put service delivery at the center, and take it from there, not prioritize anything else outside that.
So, Gabriel, I was just remarking before the show to you guys that there's something crazy about the fact that this coalition is made up of the PAC, the DA, the UDM, and the Freedom Front Plus, and the ACDP. If you told someone in 1994 that, you know, one of the major metros in the country would be covered by that coalition, they just wouldn't believe you. What do you make of all this?
Yeah, I wanted to ask, PAC or PA? Patriotic Alliance or Pan-Africanist Congress?
PAC. So the PA is against the Nelson Mandela Bay coalition, but is in favor of the Joburg coalition government. they're clearly playing a level of 4D chess here that is beyond that of us mere mortals understanding.
Yeah, and I think that's what Tiego is talking about, right? It's like, why, if you could have a coalition that doesn't involve the known looters earlier, why didn't it come earlier? Well, it's because someone's taken now to change their mind. What's changed their mind? So then people change their mind, then they change their mind again. These little fringe parties, the PAC, the Patriotic Patriotic Alliance. The Patriotic Alliance is clearly aiming to be a bit of a kingmaker. As you say, it is, you know, where, although in this instance it's not, it's on the losing side. But it's one worry.
I think the PAC brought the motion of no confidence against the DA mayor, but in Nelson Mandela Bay, they're supporting
the. The ACDP brought the motion of no confidence against.
No, the PAC did. So I'm saying PAC is
in Nelson
Germany,
Mandela Bay.
The ACDP did. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so I think part of what's encouraging though is seeing the voting patterns in places where political parties that have betrayed their, you know, fresh political parties have come up, they've been full of promise, and then they betrayed their base by doing this kind of flip flop. Those they've then been punished. So, and voters have then gone to bigger, more established opposition parties. I think that kind of thing is encouraging. But South Africa, democracy is a process. We are still a relatively young democracy. Coalitions are going to be messy. I will say I saw some polling on the question of whether coalition government is too unstable to be trusted in South Africa. And the overwhelming majority said, no, it's worth it. Let's give that a go. We're tired of what we've been dealing with. That'd be better. And my favorite thing is the question, would you like a coalition of opposition parties to come and challenge the ANC? I think it was just about a majority of ANC members said yes, or ANC voters.
yes, that suggests
so you
that they may not,
yes.
they
you
may
mustn't
not be
talk about
ANC voters for too much longer.
Yes, ANC supporters have become ANC voters. The supporters are now very few. The voters are many, but they no longer support the ANC. They're fishing for something better. It's an interesting fact. Whether the coalition will be able to take advantage of that is another question.
Mm-hmm.
Will service delivery actually improved in where they are in charge? Yeah.
So I saw a little bit, you know, how these councils work and stuff, because I was a councillor for a brief time when we had these shaky coalition governments working. And I must say that I've actually been surprised by, in my estimation, how well they've worked in comparison to how my expectations were. I thought they would be much worse. There have been some very legitimate problems with these coalitions. I know that ASA and the DA have actually voted opposite each other a couple of times, most importantly probably in Tswane. But generally speaking, at the national level, these parties have kind of held together. And where we've seen real problems is in places like Joburg, where going against the wishes of their national leadership, some of the councillors in these areas switched sides and voted for the other side. So I must say that this isn't exactly stable government, it isn't exactly efficient government, but I do think that it is a viable alternative, at least as it's going now. There's a lot of work to be done, a lot of improvements that should be made going forward, but personally I'm pretty optimistic actually about, I think, how some of these are shaking out so far. But it remains to be seen whether we really begin to see proper service delivery differentials. Because if there aren't, well, all of this talk about getting the ANC out and the ANC being the problem is going to, it's going to be a much harder argument to make for these opposition parties, I think. Tieko, any final thoughts?
Well, my final thoughts would be that political parties must really sit and consider that we are in this crisis that we are in, and what we really need at this point in time is service delivery. There are political differences around ideology and stuff. At some point, that has to pause. Practical terms and conditions, like I've said, would have to be arrived at. See, at the end of the day, the voters just want services delivered to them. You know, ultimately, that's what you want. So I hope that moving into 2024 we'll have such a situation. But of course, even though they do that, I hope we don't end up with more of the government in society, but less of the government and more of the private sector moving forward.
All right. Now let's move on to our last topic for today, I think. And we're going to be talking once again about electricity.
Yeah,
you know, load shedding is bad.
Private sector.
Yes.
So perfect segue,
You know that load shedding is bad when I don't even know when load shedding is, not because I'm not given the information, but just simply because I don't bother to look, because I have an inverter for my PC and that's about it. And I've grown tired of complaining about load shedding. But that doesn't mean that it's not causing real harm out there to especially a lot of businesses. There's some stories today in the news where they interviewed, like, for example, small business owners whose lives have just been wrecked by load shedding. And we're seeing very real consequences from it now, especially with the stage five nonsense, which is going on. But possibly help is on the way. Government has said that it has signed an agreement with three independent power producers, the Coles Corp Wind Power, Sun Kral Wind Power, and Pizen Koyao Moya Wind Power Suppliers, which are three offshore electricity providers who have wind power stations offshore, and they will be within 18 months adding to the grid, which hopefully should reduce some of the problems that we've been having with load shedding. Gabriel, you have some thoughts on this. Is this really the way we're going to get out of load shedding?
No, this is crazy. I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad thing to have three new contracts signed. But firstly, just within, I think it's window bid five, these contracts were made 11 months ago, if I'm not mistaken, and only signed now. And this is three out of like 100. So I don't know why the other 97 haven't been signed.
Gabriel, why do we have to rush? It's not like we're in a crisis or anything.
No, I think we really are in a crisis. And I take your joke, but it frustrates me that there's such a brazen lack of urgency. And the other side of it is that, look, IPP, that's green, that's good. We also need flipping energy from any source that we can get. We really need to be fixing the coal-fired stations and getting them going to capacity instead of at 50%. I thought it was interesting yesterday, Thabo Mbeki was making remarks at Wits University, some university, and he was quoted as saying, he said something to the effect that, you know, there's been a lack of leadership and that's a huge problem with what's going on at Eskom. But if I can just find this little quote here, he also said something about BEE. He said, you know, people, I've been wondering about, you know, why there's no electricity. One explanation I've seen for that, it is said that the managers who were in charge of this said that they want to increase the possibilities for black economic empowerment. So that if you now have 20 contracts, that means 20 black companies. If you have one contract, I suppose that means one black company. That's the explanation that was given, but it's part of the crisis. As you can see now, then, when Eskom announces the reason we're having level four, level five or whatever is because there's a power failure at Medupe Kansela and others. Why are the new ones, these new power stations behaving the same way as the old ones or misbehaving in the same way? In other words, the new managers of the new contracts haven't managed to do a good job. Now, I think it's telling. I've spoken ad nauseum, but I will continue to say it, about the Zondo report part one, which was reported exactly nowhere else in the mainstream media, which said, fundamentally, one of the reasons we've had such terrible corruption in South Africa is because of the institutionalized race laws that make it easy for people to deviate from the cheapest is best or best quality is best kind of option and go for something else. And as soon as you do that, it's possible to get very confused and have all kinds of corruption. So Zondo said, if we want to get our act together, we need to go for value for money. That needs to be the priority. Full stop. End of it. To see Thabo Mbeki making remarks that in his style seem to emulate the same point as telling. South Africans are getting sick and tired of the kind of shibboleths that the ANC have told, that blaming everything on apartheid and using race laws as a mapani worm to both disguise and feed corruption is a game that's no longer lasting. I just want ordinary South Africans to recognize that, so as not to give up hope. The way to get out of this is straightforward. It is to allow much more private sector involvement, both in green energy, but also in coal-fired energy, gas energy, whatever. And it is to get things meritocratic. Our campaign at the end of the last load shedding season in winter to end BEE and Eskom, to cut out the procurement requirements for pencil testing and just go for value for money is basically endorsed by the Zondo Commission. We got exemptions at Eskom for a short period of time. We need to get that again. It's urgent.
Tiako, we don't have a lot of time, but your thoughts on this issue?
Well, I'll start with a question that Gabriel asked at the beginning. Why wait for 11 months? Well, for the very same reason that most of the, many of the municipalities in South Africa at this very moment started their financial year on the 1st of July, but they haven't been able to start with projects. Comrades are busy fighting as to who the contracts should go for, should go to, right? Those are the fights that are going on. Everything becomes delayed. But I think that it's high time that we open up the market. We can't have one player in the electricity market, a monopoly. Open the market up to the private sector. Let private people start producing electricity the same way that I choose if I want to use Vodacom, MTN, or whoever else as a service provider. Let me choose who I want to use as an electricity supplier. It's that simple, really. Eskom has been failing. It needs competition. That's what it needs. If it falls and dies, let it die off, whereas others are busy producing on the private side. That would be my conclusion to the matter, really.
I see a beautiful vision of a day, one day in the future, maybe 10, 20, 30 years from now, when we have multiple electricity providers, and Eskom has had to, what remains of Eskom has had to change its name because the name of Eskom is so tainted with that of failure. But anyway, we will, of course, be back next week on the Daily Friend Show. We hope that you found this interesting, and we will see you then. Have a good weekend, everyone. Cheers, everyone.